little start started earlier. At 12:40 instead of 12:45 gives the Hebrew guys a little longer, a little more chance to go work through the text there. The text is Isaiah 25, which is that very famous passage about eating and drinking the eschatological feast on Mount Zion. It's a messianic banquet text. Of which the Lord's Supper is a foretaste. This messianic banquet, all peoples will eat and drink this on the eschatological mountain. What's interesting is the universal scope of this pericope. It's for all peoples, not just for Israel. So Isaiah 25, verse 6, it starts out in 25 verse 1, Yahweh, you are my God. I will exalt you. I will lift you up. I will praise your name. And then you have this doxology. Then it goes into 25 verse 6. This is in the section of Isaiah that's called the Isaianic Apocalypse, chapters 24 to 27. Because in this section it tends to be very eschatological. So in 25 verse 6, Va'asa Yahweh Tzevaoth, and Yahweh of hosts will do, this is a wow consecutive, a simple wow in front of a perfect, wow consecutive. So that's how you signal future discourse, future tense, very simple in Hebrew. Just like they use a while plus an imperfect to signal a past tense. Yahweh of hosts will do. Lekol ha'amim, for all the peoples. So he will make for all the peoples. Bahar hazeh, on this mountain. What's the this? It refers to the Mount Zion. On this mountain. And then here's what Yahweh will make for all peoples. Now notice, it's Yahweh of hosts. Very common phrase, the Lord of hosts, in English. In Hebrew, it's actually a name, Yahweh of hosts. Hosts refer to the heavenly armies of angels. So Yahweh of the heavenly armies. He has this huge army at his command. The picture is of Yahweh as a warrior who, you know, here that's not so much the picture. He will make for all peoples. That's pretty surprising, because in chapter 24, Isaiah announced the universal destruction of all peoples. So it's kind of universal judgment. And now in 25, it's universal salvation. So the two are paired. He will make for all peoples on this mountain. Notice the specificity and locality of it. It's not just all over the place, but it's on this mountain. Salvation is here on this mountain. The nations, if they want to be saved, have to come to this mountain. They don't get saved if they stay in Edom. They have to enter into Zion. Reminds us of Isaiah 60. Right? Arise, shine, your light has come, and all the nations come to Zion. So only in Zion, only on this mountain, is there salvation. Extra ecclesiam nulla salus est. Outside the church, there is no salvation. There's salvation only in a certain spot, and that's Zion. What will Yahweh make for all peoples? Mishte Shemanim, a feast of fatted dishes, of fat dishes, of fatted things, of shemen. That's the most precious part of the meal. Usually the shemen is what goes to Yahweh at the sacrificial altar, right? That's what you burn. But here, Yahweh is giving his food to the peoples. It's pretty amazing. What a generous God he is. He doesn't keep it to himself. He shares it. A feast of fatted things. Now that doesn't sound too attractive to us, but Wilson Schultz is having a feast of fatted things, so with his French fries. Mishte Shemarim. This is from Shemer. A feast of... Now, Shemer normally means the dregs of wine. So, a feast of dregs. I think the idea is you're going to gulp the wine down to the dregs. And then we'll learn later that these dregs are going to be purified. So these, even the dregs will be good. I think that's the idea. Certainly the wine will be good. That's the assumption. A feast of dregs. Now he picks up on the former word. Shemanim, fatted things, mamukayim, garnished with bone marrow, which is also considered a delicacy, bone marrow. And shemarim, dregs, wine dregs, mezukakim, refined, filtered. So even the dregs have been refined and are now edible. So the idea is wine and food, but the best wine and the best food. This is that, like I say, this eschatological feast awaiting all people. Then verse 7. Uvilah, and he will swallow up. That's interesting. He's keeping the eating image. Only here it's Yahweh. Yahweh will swallow up, will consume. He will swallow up Bahar Hazeh, on this mountain, Pnei Halot, the face of the covering, Halot, the covering, Al Kol Ha'amim, over all the peoples. So Yahweh is going to have a feast as well, but he's going to feast. He's going to swallow up this covering, and we'll learn in a second what that is. The next line, I think, is can be taken one of two ways. V'ha-maseka. Maseka is your normal word for a metal casting. A metal casting, a metal image. She often refers to an idol. And then nasak, the verb from which the noun maseka comes from, means to pour the molten metal into a cast. So to cast, a casting. Now if we keep that image then, the metal covering which is cast, al kol ha-goyim, over all the peoples. So the picture is that there is this, you know, metal sheet that's been poured out and cast, and that now hangs over all peoples. So it's a very strong shackles. A weaker way to see it would be to just take Maseka as a covering in a general sense. Holiday wants you to take nasak as not the verb to pour molten metal, but as the verb to weave, which doesn't occur very often. I think there's only a couple other times, once. And if you take it that way, then you have to picture a cloth covering that has been woven over all the peoples. So should we picture metal over all the peoples or a cloth? Those are the choices. But my hunch is it's the metal. That's the normal usage of the word. Bilah ha maweth la netzach. Now Isaiah makes a literal statement about what the figure of speech was referring to. So God is going to swallow up this covering, this metal casting that covers all peoples, all nations. He will swallow up death forever. You know, death is normally the swallower, right? The insatiable appetite of death, the vicious jaws of death constantly reach up and swallow up the living. But here at the eschatological day, Yahweh himself swallows up the swallower. 1 Corinthians 15, death is swallowed up in victory. St. Paul got that from Isaiah. The New Testament guys always get their stuff from the Old Testament. We're the original, and they're just kind of plagiarizing. He swallowed up death forever. And then the next one, Umacha Adonai Yahweh, and the Lord Yahweh will wipe away dim'ah, tears. I take that as collective, it's singular, tear, but tears, me'al, from upon, kol panim, all faces. Why are there these tears on all faces? Because of death. Death is the common experience of all peoples. That's what covers all nations. So God takes care of the ultimate enemy here, death. And consequently, no more tears. And then the next line, v'cherpath amo, and the reproach of his people. Now I take his people here to refer to Israel. So all the nations participate in this feast, but Israel is still first among equals, and so they get special attention. And the reproach of his people, the way Israel has been reproached, yasir, that's a hifil verb, he will cause to turn away, he will remove, me'al, from upon, kol ha'aretz, all the earth. So God takes away Israel's reproach, now Israel is glorified at this messianic banquet. And now, how do I know this will happen? Ki Yahweh deber, for Yahweh has spoken. That ki is important. English translations sometimes, NIV is notorious for omitting these keys, and that bothers me. A ki is an important conjunction. This is simply a little statement that says the preceding will happen, and we can be certain of it because Yahweh said so. That's the logic. For Yahweh has spoken. The pericope system wants us to include 9, but they don't want us to include 10. And I'm always interested in what verses they don't want to include. And you find out that the verses they don't want to include are the verses that are either historically particular. They root it in B.C. time. So they like to take the verses that you can kind of immediately apply to 20th century A.D. But the verses that are too B.C. looking, we'll kind of skip those. And then the other thing is the verses that are law. You know, if there's judgment, law, something like that, they'll skip those too. So let's kind of have a nice, positive, salvation type of pericope. But let's forget the condemnation part. And I don't know who these pericope guys are, but they're always wrong. And they should have had some exegetes on this committee to, you know, demarcate the unit proper, because they're always missing the beginning and the ending of the unit. They start in the middle, they stop a verse too soon. You know, it's... Well, I don't know who they were. Systematicians, probably. Liturgists, probably. But I don't know. But they ought to, you know, at least get the pericope right. And in this pericope, the pericope is verses 6 to 12. It's not. It doesn't stop at verse 9. Anyway, verse 9. Va'amar bayom hahu. And he will say in that day, the subject is indefinite, so one, a person will say in that day, Hine Eloheinu zeh. Hine, look, pay attention to the following sentence, or following phrase. Eloheinu zeh, this is our God. Kivinu, we have waited lo for him, so we have been waiting all along for him. V'yoshieni, and he saves us. Or we've been waiting for him that he would save us. The Yoshia is a hifil of Yasha, and Yasha in the hifil just means to save. The new on the end then would be the object suffix, that he would save us. So this is the salvation they've been waiting for, the ultimate salvation. Zeh Yahweh, this is Yahweh, parallel to this is our God. Kivinu lo, we have waited for him, just like earlier. The BHS does not set this up as poetry, but my hunch is it is poetry. You should actually set it up as parallel lines. We have waited for him. Nagila, as in Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila, same thing. It's from Gil, and it means to exalt, to rejoice, and the nun in front of it and the kamate on the end make it a cohortative. So let us rejoice. So on that eschatological day, we're all going to sing Hava Nagila. And let us rejoice, or let us exalt, Va Nismaka. That's also from that song. Hava is an interjection, come on. Nagila, let us exalt. Va Nismaka, let us rejoice. So maybe the song just comes from Isaiah here. Let us rejoice. Bishuatho, in his salvation. So that's what the community will do, is praise God at this eschatological banquet where there is no more death. And then verse 10, the key clause links it up. For Tanuach Yad Yahweh, Yad is a feminine noun, for the hand of Yahweh, Nuach, rests Bahar Hazeh on this mountain. So now, instead of having this covering over this mountain, now Yahweh's hand covers the mountain. So Yahweh now protects the mountain, assures it then of this eternal salvation. But V'nadosh Moab, Moab Taktav. But Moab will be threshed in its place. And then he proceeds to talk about how Moab is going to get it. That's the other side of the coin. So the idea is, on this mountain, Zion, is salvation. But apart from this mountain, if you stay in your own spot, like Moab, judgment. So, yes, there is salvation for all people, but they got to come to this mountain. They can't stay there over in Moab. Now, why does he pick on Moab? My feeling is they can use any nation to illustrate the outsiders. He just picked on Moab. Later he picks on Edom. But I don't think we should interpret this as some special animosity toward Moab. I think it's just Moab is a run-of-the-mill goy, and so they illustrate that. So, salvation only in Zion. What kind of salvation? No more death, eschatological banquet with Yahweh. Wonderful passage. This is the pericope for which Sunday? Easter. Okay, that's what I have. Any questions?